Welcome to Parents Perspective.
I never actually did lose my son, Max. Not even close. This, however, did not keep me from experiencing, several times a day, the neurotic fear. Oh my God, where is he, Max? Oh, there he is, sitting in my lap. Phew. I remember the first time I really did take Max to Starbucks with me. He had one of those enormously complex devices known to all parents as the Snap and Go. It's called such because the name, fight with the crying child to get into it, catch your finger in the slot as you try to put the seat in the car, scream bloody murder and go, while more accurate, was already taken. I did what all dads do. I put my mint mocha macchiato on top of the car, took the Snap and Go along with little Max out of the stroller, clicked it into its little docking device in my back seat, and drove off with the coffee on the roof. And then the fear. Wait, did I just put the coffee in the seat and Max on the roof? Oh my God! Because when the kid is in that little snap-and-go basket, you do tend to set him down once in a while to get your keys, to scratch your butt, whatever. And let's face it, as you approach 50, everything else you set down gets lost sooner or later. Keys, glasses, coffee, books, wallets, drinks, light bulbs, magazines, dogs, cats, BMWs. What's to stop you from setting Max down on the counter at the drugstore and walking away? I'm truly sorry if this thought has not occurred to you, because once you have thought it, you cannot unthink it. Ever. For months after that, I was obsessed with the fear that I would leave that little apple basket someplace with Max in it. I'd be driving along and an electric shock would run through me. Oh my God, did I put Max in the car? And I would whip around and there he would be, face backwards, my little turtle in his plastic and foam pillow shell, completely absorbed in another attempt to fit both feet in his mouth simultaneously. So by the time Max had turned 2 and was walking, my fear of losing him had had a good long time to simmer and develop into a full-fledged neurosis.
That was a selection from a hilarious new book on midlife fathering, Dadditude, read by the author, Philip Lerman. From a parent's perspective, what can we learn about beginning parenthood in midlife? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is experiencing firsthand just what he has shared with us in Dadditude. Philip Lerman is the former co-executive producer of America's Most Wanted and former national editor of USA Today. He has written of his parenting experience in Dadditude, which he describes as giving up what you thought was important to learn what's really important, somewhere between macho and mothering, flanked by control and chaos, with equal doses of sarcasm and nostalgia, and as essential to being a modern father. Phil is the father of 5-year-old Max and stepfather to 17-year-old Anna. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Phil.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
So tell us what your biggest surprise was about becoming an older dad.
Other than the fact that everybody laughs when they see that your house is scattered with reading glasses and pacifiers, the thing that surprises you the most is how quickly you realize that we were, as a species, meant to have children at a much younger age, that all of those hormones, their age and the teenagers, they're there for a reason. Because when you have a kid this old, you cannot believe how enormously tired you get and how incredibly exhausting it is. You cannot believe how incapable you are of doing what you used to do, of staying up all night when you have to. That was a bit of a shock. I mean, everybody tells you, oh, you know, you're not going to get much sleep, but you don't realize what they mean when you're not getting much sleep. You're not getting much sleep at all. And so that's tougher. I think the other thing that surprised me is how much more meaningful it was to me at this age. Comparing my experience with other fathers, I think that when you pass 50, something happens to you and you start realizing that what's ahead is shorter than what's behind. And so there's a part of you that appreciates each day a little bit more and accepts what's there a little bit more. And that, I think, is a very fertile ground for fatherhood. If you let yourself accept your normal feelings when you're over 50, which is, this could be the last chance I get to do this. And let's face it, when you're 50 and you have a kid, you notice maybe the last time you're doing this. And so I think that when you start feeling that, it makes each day a little bit more precious, each time you have with the child a little bit more special. And I think that that's something that I hadn't expected to feel quite that deeply.
How are your interactions with Max different than you would expect them to be with younger fathers and kids?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was still in America's Most Wanted when I had Max. I didn't have Max. I didn't actually do the having.
You assisted.
I pretty much stood around and watched and cheered. When we had Max, I was still at America's Most Wanted, and by chance, there were 3 other guys at the office who were having kids at the same time. And I'm basically old enough to be most of their fathers, certainly their uncles. So my experience with them, we used to have these daddy days over at my house where I'd have all the fathers come over with the kids and they'd crawl around like little amoeba in the playroom. And I think one of the biggest differences I saw with them is that their conversations often tended toward what they were missing in life. Because they have kids, they didn't get to go out to the bars like they used to. There's a concert last night, can you believe? These guys are playing over at the MCI Center and we're not going to get to go. And I think when you're over 50... you've been to enough bars, you drank enough, you smoked enough, you chased enough women, you can't stay up that late for the rock concerts anyway, you have less of a desire to go out and play. And you're more centered on how much fun it is to be here with the little amoebas. And I think that was one of the differences. I think also when you're over 50, you get bored with entertaining yourself. You've been sort of keeping yourself amused for 30 years. You're a good audience, but after a while you run out of material. So I think you have a little bit more patience to listen to somebody rattling on and prattling on to you the way little kids do, because you've been through more and you're more patient, I think, more willing to just sort of settle into this role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're not as self-absorbed, basically, as people who are younger and still sort of finding themselves and getting themselves together.
When you're over 50, you get self-absorbed in different ways, like what is this pain in my arm? What is this thing on my nose? I didn't notice I had this thing on my cheek. When did that come? Well, that's a different kind of self-absorption. The desire to just entertain yourself, I think, wanes in the face of this enormously entertaining little ball that's come into the room.
We so enjoyed reading Dadditude. It's a very funny look at fatherhood and midlife. But it's also a comparison of the differences in attitudes between men and women. What would you say was the most significant difference you found in parenting?
I think fathers realize that when it comes to parenting, mothers are God. I mean, let's face it. When you look at somebody and say, I created you whole inside my body and gave you all your sustenance for a year before you were born and in many cases for a year after that, it's pretty hard to compete with. You know,
what
I taught you to throw a curveball compared to, you know.
Right. And for so,
you
all know, the mothers. That we
and so basically, by the time the kid is like a day old, you know, you gave it the office. You've already got the eternal devotion there. You don't look at God. You don't look at the guy who brought light on the firmament and created the heaven and earth and Penelope Cruz. And, so, and you don't look at God and say, what have you done for me lately? So mothers have this bond with their child that fathers are always catching up to. Fathers are the Avis of parenting. We're always trying harder. We're always joking and cajoling and telling and working and doing and trying to find some way to replicate that bond that the mother and the child have. The father's always trying to do that. That forms a lot of the difference in the reactions between mothers and their children and fathers and their children.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about beginning fatherhood in midlife.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Phil Lerman, author of Dadditude, about midlife fatherhood. Do you find, maybe because of the business that you just sketched, that mothers tend to be more protective of their children and fathers tend to be more adventuresome?
I don't know if fathers tend to be less protective, especially neurotic Jewish fathers like me. Everybody says, oh, I would throw myself in front of a truck for my kid, you know? And I realized as I'm walking down the street, not only would you, but fathers, being practical people, start figuring out how you would do it. Let's see, if the kid ran in front of the truck. Now, if I run and get him and try to pull him back toward me, now my momentum's going forward, so that's not going to... So I'm going to have to push him forward. So if the truck's coming from the left, I actually have to look to the right to see if it's safe to push him forward. You think I haven't thought this. So fathers are protective in their own neurotic way. I think that the fact that fathers may be a little bit more adventuresome may just come from their nature in general of the way that fathers like to try to approach the world. But when it comes to being terrified about your child, that's a tie.
People sometimes say that mothers carry their babies close to their neck and cuddle them on their shoulder and whatever. Fathers turn them around and face them towards the outside. They shouldn't miss anything.
Well, this comes from when we were cave people, see, because men were the hunters and women were the gatherers. So as gatherers, they were more in a circle working together. Fathers were facing forward, and they were trying to hunt down the wildebeest. Right? So now when you look at how men interact now, What do guys like to go? We go to a ball game together. We're facing the same direction. When women get together, they face each other. That's why women don't like ball games. If you put the seats facing each other, women would love the ball game. And they're actually building stadiums that way now with the seats facing together so you can talk more easily during the innings.
Yeah. Solves a lot of problems.
We are, of course, having a wonderful time with you at this point. But why have you found humor is such an important ingredient in your story?
I think humor is an important ingredient. Thank you. I think an important ingredient. Let's face it. This is the craziest business there is. And people don't talk enough about how incredibly hard and incredibly crazy it is to try to raise a kid. I was sitting there with my little boy, and I remember, you know, changing his diaper and rubbing the little Bomex on his cute little tushy. And he's looking up with you with those great big dark eyes. And suddenly, he pees in your face. Now, every father has gone through this. There are two ways to react to this. You can get really upset. Or you can laugh at yourself. And unless you learn to laugh at yourself, you're going to spend a lot of time upset. Because in one way or another, that activity we just described is going to repeat itself symbolically throughout the child's life. So you might as well get used to it.
We had that exact experience the day my son recently brought home his newborn from the hospital. My son does.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. My son does a form of skin cancer surgery. Mm. So he has gone through all kinds of messy things up till this point in his life. And he was changing the baby's diaper. I was standing next to him for moral support. He said, you come in here too. So I did. And suddenly he starts waving his hands in the air. He peed on me! He peed on me! And I said, it's okay. Dry your hands. You know how to do things like that. Cover him with whatever is handy. He says, you take over. I have to go wash my hands. And we all just laughed so hard. And of course, the baby does it every time you take his diaper off.
There are helmets now that they've developed with little windshield wipers in the front. They do the job. I think that that's important. I changed every diaper. For the first 2 weeks, Max was home. I took 2 weeks off of work. I changed every diaper for the first 2 weeks because I said, Rachel is in charge of incoming and I'll be in charge of outgoing. And babies are very outgoing in that department, so there's a lot to do. You know, it's one of those things that dads can do in terms of making that bond early on. You know, let's face it, guys. Diaper is not that hard a thing to change. Every guy who's listening to me has either changed a tire or swapped out a carburetor. If you can do that, the diaper is simple after that. And it's one of those things that gets you involved with a kid early on. Fathers tend to get involved later when the kid is old enough to go to the movies, to catch a ball, to understand a fart joke. These are the things. This is the place where dads tend to get involved. And you miss so much. You miss so much if you wait for that. And so training yourself, teaching yourself, fooling yourself into getting involved in the beginning. Breastfeeding is something you should leave to the experts. But there's lots of other stuff that you can be doing there in the early times. And once you let yourself settle into being with that nonverbal creature, it's very, very satisfying. That's a good place to start. And if they pee in your face, then they pee in your face. Like I said, symbolically, that's going to happen the rest of your life with the kids, so you just got to get used to it.
And everything gets washed all the time anyway, so you throw whatever's nearby onto the child.
When we moved into our first house, the people who had it before had decorated it in very dark browns, and I thought, this is really depressing. Why is this all dark brown? Of course, then we proceeded to have boys, and then more boys, and more boys, and I realized real fast why it was dark brown. If you had your midlife fatherhood to do over again, what would you change?
I would do it younger. The one thing I would change, I don't know if I could change, but as a neurotic father, I know I've passed a lot of my neuroses on to Max, and I wish I hadn't. I held his hand. He's 5 years old now, and I think I held his hand going down the stairs until yesterday. oh, my God, Max, don't climb on that. Don't stand so close to the streets. I was always worrying. I walked around behind him. He shouldn't fall down. To other people, a park is a place for kids to play. To me, it's a place for them to build up potential energy so that they can fall from great heights and harm themselves. And I know I've passed that on. I tried not to. But I think that when a kid is climbing jungle gym and the father stops breathing and starts shaking, I think they sense it somehow. And when you yell, no, 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 get down from there, I think they innately know that you're afraid. And so I think that I've passed on those fears to him. He's very cautious physically in the world, and he's very cautious on the playground, and he won't go up to the top of things. And he goes on top of the little train at the park here, and then he starts crying, Daddy, I can't get down. And Max, just put your foot over there. I can't. I say, you know what? That's me. That's my little son. And I see myself at that age, and I was probably the same way. And it's, we probably passed this down since I think Adam was the first neurotic father who was afraid that the kid would fall out of the tree. And I think we've just passed it on since then.
My oldest son is the one who has two children so far. And the oldest has been taking swimming for about a year. Saturday morning, she goes to the pool with her father, and she's not letting go of her father anytime soon. She'll reach for whatever the toys are the teacher throws 3 feet ahead, but she's hanging on to her daddy. 2 weeks ago, they took her 9-month-old brother swimming for the first time, and he joined a swimming class. He is fearless. My son says, I can't believe the difference between the two children. I said, it's just like you and brother number two. Number one child, we hover. This is your number one baby. You didn't have Anna as a new baby. And you, I think we all hover. Number two child doesn't have that as much. You don't worry about it as much because you've gotten used to it a little bit better. But it's real interesting to see it in my grandchildren, just like in my children.
I think you're probably right. I think that with the first child that comes through, you cannot imagine them actually growing up. And so you're certain something will stop them somewhere along the line. And it's your job to fight that force of nature. And with the, once you've gotten one through, you say, look, they actually progress all on their own. I don't have to will him to get older. He will actually be a day older tomorrow, all on his own. And so you breed a little bit more. All the guys who had kids about the same time as Max, most of them have had another one since. And I do see that difference. You do breed a little bit more, I guess. But
do you have any specific advice for other midlife dads?
There are a couple things that you realize at midlife. When you're father at 50, most of us have obviously been in the workplace for a long time. A lot of us, just by dint of hanging around long enough, have become managers. Mm-hmm. And you tend to bring your management philosophy home with you when you don't have a kid until 50. And the same things that worked for you in the office, praise those who work well and those who don't. I will have calm but firm conversations with them. And this way, we will teach them the right way to work and all will be right with the world. I think you tend to bring that sense of order and discipline into the house and think the same thing will work. And, of course, a three-year-old takes that belief and stuffs cheese balls in it. Yeah. I came home from running a staff of 50 people who actually did what I said most of the time and found myself negotiating over how many bites of macaroni and cheese you can have before I give you back your light stick and negotiating very poorly. And pretty much losing at every turn of that. And so I think part of being a father in midlife is accepting the chaos and accepting that it's not going to be like the workplace and accepting in yourself that you've come to believe that the hours between 9 and 6 are ordered ones. And that if things get a little crazy when you get home, well, that's okay because we've had order all day. And when you're a father at midlife, you tend to cling to that desire for order a little bit more.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about beginning fatherhood in midlife.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Phil Lerman, author of Dadditude, about midlife fatherhood.
Looking ahead as a dad at midlife, what do you see as your biggest challenge?
Well, I think because I have a teenager in the house already, I kind of know some of the things that come. And people say, oh, I can't wait till they're a little bit older and they're a little bit more independent. When you're an older dad, you know what it is to have a teenager in the house. And now I know that I'm going to be in my 60s when he's, Dad, can I stay out till 2 a.m. because all the other kids are staying out till 2 a.m. And I'm thinking, I can't even make it to Leno anymore. Well, it won't be Leno then, at least, you know, but whoever it is, I won't be there. So I think that some of it is when you're older dad, you're always doing the math and you're always realizing where you'll be when. And so I think that's part of it is not only the time part of it, but the emotional challenge the emotional challenge of a teenager because they're basically crazy people. And maintaining the patience and the ability to talk to crazy people is something that I hope I can hang on to, but that's going to be the big challenge. Is, you know, we've been through the teenage years once, but going through it again 10, 15 years down the road from now, that'll be a hoot.
And I think also you have to be able to have the patience to do it at 3 a.m. when they're just arriving.
That's the other thing that is an advantage, though, to being an older father, is because you've either been through this once, or at least most of your friends have teenagers now, you know the challenges that teenage life brings into the house. And so when my friends who have little ones are talking about, I can't get Sally to eat her vegetables. She just won't eat the vegetables. I say, you know what? Let's get to the point where, like, you know, I can't get Billy to stop snorting the cocaine, and then we'll talk. You know, you know, I don't care how hard it is when the baby cries at 2 a.m. It's a lot easier than when the police call at 2 a.m. And so we've all seen teenagers. God bless. Anna hasn't gotten through any of this yet. But we've all had friends with teenagers who've gotten into trouble in one sort or the other. And it's a lot more serious than not eating their vegetables. So I think that's one of the things that is in one of the advantages of being an older dad, is either you've been through it or your friends have been through it, and you have a little perspective. The terrible behaviors that 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds do, not so terrible. Unless you're a really bad parent, the 4-year-old is probably not going to crash your car.
We hope not. I think perspective and priorities are what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
There they are.
Yeah.
In our house, our youngest was born when the oldest was between 14 and 15.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a very interesting juxtaposition.
We have that same exact stretch. That's
exactly. Yeah. Seems perfectly normal, doesn't it? But I was always worried because we were up anyway. We were up changing the baby, and the oldest one would come home, and I would just be hoping that in the wee hours of the morning when I wasn't at my best, that I would change the diaper of the little one and talk about philosophy with the older one rather than the reverse.
Well, if only their schedule synced up well enough. But in our house, it was always, you know, the minute Max goes to sleep, then Anna needs to go to Andrew's house. And then you got to go pick her up from there. And then he's awake because he had a nightmare about the ducks. And then you finally get him asleep. And now she's got to go out because she left a book at school. And the two of them can go on like this until 2 in the morning when the dog throws up on the carpet. And so if you can only get them to all do this at the same time, it'll be good. But it's the synchronization that they have going that needs some work.
Of course. And then if you get a little bit older, you're up all night anyway.
There is that. You know, as long as I'm up, I'll go check on the baby. What do you know?
Phil, in addition to your book, Dadtitude, which, again, we love, what resources would you suggest for listeners who might want to pursue further some of the issues we've been talking about?
We have a website, dadtitude.com. There's a place there for fathers to share their stories. And we really hope that that gets to be a place where people can kick things back and forth. One of the things that I enjoyed about doing this book is it encouraged fathers to talk to me about their stories with their kids. And they're starting to come to the website now and bring their stories. And it's so helpful to know you're not in this alone. And especially in terms of keeping, as you say, your perspective on this and keeping your humor about this, that's really important. There's another website, babycenter.com, that we've had since 9 months before Max was born. And it's really good at, like, giving you little insights for how old your kid is now and what are the issues that you're dealing with now, and giving you sort of benchmarks. It can be a little scary because if you get too much into, oh, it's 6 months, they should be crawling forward, not backwards. And at 9 months, they should be saying, hello, dada. And so you start freaking out because your kid's ahead or behind those little curves. So that can be a little scary. But in terms of every once a week getting these emails that sort of, oh, what do you know? They knew exactly what we were dealing with this week. How to deal with nighttime terrors. Oh, my goodness. We were just talking about that at 3 o'clock this morning. So I find that to be a really useful website as well. And also, you know, I got to go back to the classics. The guys who have written funny books about father, the inspiration for me in this, I think keeping your sense of humor is really important. Then I think that in terms of the mountain of books that get thrown at you, you and your wife, I think, have to make an important decision. Are you going to be Dr. Sears family or are you going to be Dr. Ferber family? And if you don't know these names, you obviously don't have a kid yet. But the two philosophies of putting the child to sleep, the Dr. Sears, which is basically hold the baby, cuddle the baby, be the baby, wear the baby, and the baby will become confident in the universe and will sleep forever, and man will lay down his sword and shield down by the riverside and study war no more. And Dr. Ferber, which is let him cry it out, which I've seen people just in torture over the screaming child and let him cry it out. And I think that neither of those is right for everybody. Even Dr. Ferber came out and said, you know, I didn't mean this for everybody. But I think making that decision, reading those two books, knowing which philosophy, getting on the same page, no pun intended, but making that decision early on, which way we're going to try to go, and agreeing on it and supporting each other on it, I think that's the most important issue. I've never seen anything through all these years that tears couples apart as the question of whether or not we're going to Ferberize or Searsarize. My wife hypnotized me. She only let me read Dr. Sears. So we went that way. But those are the things that I think that are helpful.
Well, we are so glad that Phil Lehrman could be with us and talk about midlife fatherhood with his wonderfully warm and funny book, Daditude. Thanks so very much, Phil.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Phil Lehrman's book, Daditude, How a Real Man Became a Real Dad. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 332, and please tell us what station you're listening to if you can.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.